talk a little music after we listen to a little bit first.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep.
Well, the man known as the chairman of the board, Old Blue Eyes, Francis Albert Sinatra, passed away 25 years ago this weekend. And here to talk with us about him is our friend, sports writer, author, and occasional Sirius XM radio host, Bob Ryan. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Well, you're entirely welcome.
Bob, by the way, we chatted about this online last night. Congratulations to you. You are a member of the first class of our show's Hall of Fame. It's a pretty eclectic group. You, Ken Burns, actor Bryan Cranston, Mike Farrell from MASH, your Globe colleague Chad Finn, even Gary Tangway somehow made it in. I think the main vote might have swung things his way.
Well, I'm very honored to be included with all my main buddies as well, and that's a distinguished group. I'm honored, proud. Thank you. Seriously, I'm flattered, and thank you for anybody who voted for me.
Well, good, because the next question is this. We're going to send down a tattoo. You're willing to get a tattoo with our show logo, right?
As long as it's temporary, yes.
Look, it all depends on where you choose to place it, Bob. We don't judge. Well, let's talk about Frank Sinatra. When did you first become a Sinatra fan?
I would say that I was aware of Sinatra, the recording artist, with his 45s and Capitol during the 50s, learning the blues and the love and marriage and things like that. And I was aware of those songs. But the turning point for me when I realized there was something more going out there than the sheltered kid from Trenton, New Jersey knew was about when I was about 14 or 15. And I purchased his first album on Reprise, his album, his label that he started after he left Capitol, which was Ring a Ding Ding. And I lived with my mother and aunt, and I co-purchased it with my Aunt Peg, I believe. We went halvesies. And so that was my first Sinatra album purchase. And I probably wound up with 30 or 40 albums before it was all over in the world of 33. But that album stands up. I think it's one of his four or five greatest albums. The only time he worked with Johnny Mandel, I don't know. Do you know the story? Does anyone know why he didn't go with Riddle? Why he didn't go with Billy May? Why he didn't go with, I don't know, maybe Don Costa or Gordon Jenkins? But he picked Mandel, who served him very well. Some of those arrangements stand absolutely the test of time, stand up with anybody. And yet he never worked with him again, to my knowledge, not in the recording studio. Maybe he did a concert or two with him. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know the story behind that, but he's such an interesting story. So many phases of his career. Do you enjoy his early work when he was with the Dorsey Band?
Oh, absolutely. And, the down period, of course, is that late 40s, early 50s, the Columbia thing, the butting heads with Mitch Miller, A&R, about some of the stupid things he had him sing. And, which resulted in him getting himself away and getting one way or the other and getting to Capitol, where he flourished, of course. And then in the very end, he wanted to stay current. He shouldn't have recorded Bad, Bad, Leroy Brown. He shouldn't have done a few of those things. He didn't need Winchester Cathedral. He didn't need to try to show the kids that he could still do it. He was Sinatra. He didn't need that. But, he wanted to be on the charts. And that's the only number one he ever had in those days was with Nancy. And it's just something stupid. But the bulk of it, the thing that makes Sinatra Sinatra, of course, was the great work that stands the test of time in Capitol and in Reprise. And of course, the Columbia stuff. Some of the Columbia stuff is great, of course. Birth of the Blues, I recommend that highly. That's a fantastic arrangement and performance.
You talk about his down period, and what did he do in his down period? Channeled his energy into acting, and not many reach the same heights in two areas like he did, because he was a tremendous actor.
No, that's right. He of course, the great turning point was circa 53. His life is, he's had the downside. He's had the disaster a couple of years earlier at the Copa when he opened his mouth and nothing came out. He had, the whole Ava Gardner period. Which was boom and bust for him, and then of course he's not is out of favor. And the two things happened. I don't know what the exact proximity was, the exact timetable, but in a general period of time, he is put together with Nelson Riddle, and he gets the Come Here to Eternity. He lobbies himself hard to play Maggio. He said, that's me, I can do it. And, of course, he winds up with an Oscar, and then he winds up with an affiliation with Riddle, which is, you know, arguably the greatest arranger-performer collaboration of all time in American popular music. And that's saying a lot, because Riddle worked with everybody, including Nat King Cole and Ella, and well, not Ella necessarily, but Nat, and I know Rosemary Clooney and many others. But Sinatra and Riddle, certainly you cannot think of one without the other.
Yeah, and if we believe the story, apparently as soon as he got done recording the first song he did with Riddle, I've Got the World on a String, he said, I'm back, baby, I'm back.
Well, that arrangement, right, it jumps, grabs you right from the start, and that was the beginning of as they said in, at the end of Casablanca, of a beautiful friendship, a beautiful professional collaboration. We can argue, you know, which, you know, the most famous arrangement, of course, is I Got You Under My Skin. And I wouldn't argue against it, but there's a couple of others that for me are right there with it.
He also, I thought, did some very good albums in the 60s as a youngster. I absolutely loved his album, That's Life.
Okay, I there's some good things on that, absolutely. You can pick, you know, there are so many that pick. Because, you know, we've discussed this, some pinnacle to me, the thing that if you want to know what Sinatra all about, the performer, what was the man on stage all about, and it's Sinatra at the Sands. It's all there. Everything that made Sinatra Sinatra as a singer is on that album with Basie. And, you know, if you have nothing else to show for it, he could stand on that alone.
What was it that made him such a unique vocalist? Was it his phrasing, his ability to take somebody else's song and completely make it his own?
Well, that's the standard. I'm not a trained musician. I'm a fan. Period. I'm just a devoted fan. They talk about the phrasing. I do know that his diction is impeccable. I do know that he made a point of exploding his T's and using his G's when he wanted to. Not all the time, but when he wanted to. His diction was phenomenal, and he made a big point. Now he said, if I'm not mistaken, that his inspiration for that or his model was Mabel Mercer. I know he gives a lot of credit to Billie Holiday for certain aspects of his singing, but the phrasing thing, I think he credits Mabel Mercer. Well, and everybody that followed him winds up crediting him for showing you how to do it.
And I think it's a lost art in modern music these days, but he obviously... He looked over lyrics. He understood the power of lyrics, I think, better than any contemporary singer.
Well, yes, he did. He told the story. That's what they like to say. They told the story. He did respect the lyrics. He had great respect for all the great lyricists that he worked, whose songs he did, whether it was Porter or whether it was Berlin or whether it was Johnny Mercer or whether it was later on Sammy Kahn. I love his stuff with Sammy Kahn. I love the things that Kahn and Van Heusen wrote for him. And you know, that talk about another phenomenal part. He had so many great collaborations, and certainly that was a notable one.
Did you ever get a chance to see him perform live?
No, I didn't. And that's obviously a great regret. I've listened to so many of the live albums, but no, I did not.
Should he be considered in the conversation for the greatest entertainer of the 20th century?
That's interesting. You know, when I grew up there, they talked about the entertainer. The gold standard was Al Jolson. And then later on, because of the fact that he could sing and dance, Sammy Davis Jr. as a performer, as a guy that you go to see and give you a show. Sinatra, he did do his little hoofing with Green Gene Kelly in certain movies and On the Town and taking out to the ball game and stuff. But he was not a dancer. He did, you know, but I don't know. I just know that I'll say this. It's hard to be, you know, any better. I'll give Bennett credit, though. Some of the things that Bennett does, he get Tony Bennett, who, of course, Sinatra had anointed as his favorite vocalist, has to get some, you know, be into that conversation as well.
I wanted to ask you about another album, too, that was a favorite of mine. when I was a kid, and that was the September of My Years album.
Yeah, September of My Years. Well, he songs of that nature, he just completely co-opted. That song particularly is a great song, you know, and there's so many of those that he's stuck. But the thing, when that tempo, that those ballads, he did as well as anyone's ever done them. There's no question. And mid-tempo is good. And, you know, it wasn't always the greatest up-tempo, but there are a couple of them that are great. The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. Oh, boy, that's a great arrangement. And he nails that one. And that's a very fast, high-tempo thing. And Satisfy Me One More Time, which that's another song that you wouldn't think he would really master, but he did.
I like his version a lot of You Make Me Feel So Young.
Oh, well, here we go. You know, I think about if I had to pick one, ultimately, you know, the version in Sinatra at the Sands, I think I better sing before I turn 51 or 29, excuse me. The Basie, the Quincy Jones arrangement, Basie band, that is, at the least for me, it's a top three Sinatra moment of all time recording. I heard it again yesterday. I could be happily listening to that every day of my life.
Now, was there some Jersey loyalty there when you first were introduced to his music?
That's only now. You know, we can claim the boss as well. We can claim Sinatra. And so, yes, a little bit. Hoboken, New Jersey, I think that's kind of cool. But it's not central to my appreciation of Sinatra. It's just an amusing little subplot.
Absolutely. Well, Bob, while we got you here, I want to talk a little bit of sports and ask you, what in the world is going on with these Celtics?
Before the season, and based on the way they did not get it done last year against Golden State when they were on the verge of doing so, and watching and the fact that they have had almost a master's degree in lead blowing at times in the last 2 years, I said they're annoying, and they continue to be annoying. They do not need any infusion of talent. They have the requisite basketball playing talent to go all the way. What they have to prove to us is that now they know, how to play when it matters and how to turn it on at the right moment and how to defend at the right moment, how to seize the moment. They haven't done that. Obviously they should have won the game in Atlanta, and there's, we can dissect that. And that was a very disturbing no-show last night. That's what it was. It was over quickly, though the final score, it wasn't 30 points or anything. They were not in the game. The closest they got it down to 5 at one point, and then it went right back up to 15. And then when they had a little bit of chance to get the crowd back in the game, Brown walked up and cranked two free throws. It's all above the head with them, that whether they're going to do it or not. But it's not about talent. They have enough good players. In fact, I continue to insist they have more good players, 1 to 11, than any team in the league, except it's a rule you don't need 9, 10, and 11. Mm. And it doesn't matter anymore. But I'm not giving up. We've been here before. As far back as 88, they lost game 5 at home against Atlanta, and then they went down to Atlanta, and Danny Ainge had a great game, 22 points and 14 assists, and they pulled it out, and then, of course, that set the stage for the great Dominic Bird shootout, one of the great basketball games. Red Auerbach said it was the best NBA action he'd ever seen. Was that 118-116 game 7 in 88. And then last year, they came from 3-2.
Right.
So it can be done. It can be done. I'm not giving up, but they just have to prove that they have what it takes to deserve being called champions. I think they think they're better than they are, and they have to, but they haven't earned it yet.
Red Sox have been a pleasant surprise so far this season. Can they hang around and at least be in the playoff conversation for a while?
Let's see what happens with the pitching staff. Paxton, we're going to get a look at. It'd be nice to think he could make a contribution. I'm not sold on the rotation at all. The bullpen has been surprisingly good, and the hitting, the run production, they lead the league in doubles again. They've been a double-sitting team for 70 years, but they are once again, and they're getting some production. They're certainly getting enough run production. It's going to come down to whether they pitch well enough to hang in. I mean, they're not going to catch the Rays. I'm not worried about that. I want to get a wild card. There's a lot of parity in the league once you get beyond the Rays. But they should be in that discussion now. I'm happy as a season ticket holder. I'm very pleased to think that we're going to have an enjoyable summer. And so good for them.
Absolutely. Bob, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts on Frank Sinatra with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really flattered because ultimately, what am I? I'm a fan, but just a music fan. He's special, and I'm happy that you're commemorating his 25th anniversary of his death.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bob. We'll talk again soon.
You're welcome.
It's Bob Ryan with us on Downtown.